Okay. Hi, everybody. Hey, we're on Facebook Live as well, recording this out at the In the Garage podcast. Big Jim here. Matt Yoakam. Say hi to everybody, Matt.
Hey, what's going on, Motown?
Yeah, all right, man. Our buddy Matt here. We're sitting here in the studio talking about Daytona, obviously. If you guys have questions, comments, you can post them down below, and we'll get to as many of those as we can. You and I were talking about, and I put this up on our garage page, WCSX.com. The garage, we'll text it to you, keyword garage. Joe Gibbs takes the trophy and goes into a Steak and Shake Sunday night. But you were telling me, and Joe tries to explain a little bit too, that's not the first time he's done that.
No, back in 1993, when they won the first Daytona 500 for Joe Gibbs Racing with Dale Jarrett and the old Interstate Batteries Chevy, you know, J.D. Coy, his two sons, and his wife and coach, they went to Steak and Shake on the way home back to the hotel because the boys were like, hey, Dad, you know, we're kind of hungry. Can we stop at Steak and Shake? So they took the trophy with them into Steak and Shake, and so that began a tradition, which they did back with Denny Hamlin when he won a couple of years ago, and they did it again after this year's Daytona 500. And I think that's something that's pretty cool because when you look at the sport itself, and to me, I always think it's a great example of how genuine and just real the people are. I mean, even Roger Penske, you look what he did for Detroit back when the Super Bowl was there and how he helped the city and everything. So Roger Penske, And the bunch, when Joey Logano won in 2015, where did they go for their post-celebration? I mean, this is Roger Penske. I mean, 66,000 employees. I mean, the man never sleeps. He's jetting everywhere doing business deals. They took the team to Steak and Shake. And to see a picture of Roger Penske, his wife Kathy, the whole gang there, and then you saw Coach Gibbs and his whole crowd were there. I think that's pretty cool.
You think we've got Matt Yoakam with us, by the way, Fox Sports, of course, after the Daytona 500 on Sunday. So, Matt, there's always talk, you know, like, I don't want to do the whole, I'm not doing the whole NASCAR this and that and ratings and stuff because it was a fun race. But there is something to be said for connecting like it used to be with the fans. There was a time that I remember when you went, you feel like you were more connected to whether it was the driver or the team. You know what I mean? And when when Joe goes out and does things like this, when you see the drivers, like there was the video last year, was it Kyle Busch when he pulled up next to somebody who was a Kyle Busch fan and said hi to him, filmed it.
Yeah. I mean, you're sitting there in race traffic after the race and you're going down the road. I think it's 220 and you look over and there's Kyle Busch right next to you. And you know, his wife, was filming it and, it was pretty funny. But, you know, I think that's what's when you see guys like that to try to make a connection with the fans, and they'll go out in the campgrounds, and I've seen it a number of times where they'll go up and they'll sign someone's cardboard cutout that they've got in their campsite, and they have no idea that he's even there. And they go out and they do fun stuff. I mean, Brad Keselowski does that at the campgrounds, and I really get a sense that the younger crowd – they're bringing a little bit different game to making that connection with the fans. And I think it's all but a positive. I mean, you're seeing the connections being made. And I have a pretty good feeling about this year. You know, hey, we're going to go to Atlanta, entirely different ball game with the new rules. But I think that the positive momentum we've got coming out of Daytona, the ratings were up. I haven't seen the final rating, but with Fox, the way the trends roll, when the overnight is up, the final rating is going to be even better when all the other smaller markets, their numbers pile in.
You heard like 8%. I mean, that increase. Now, I want to get to Atlanta in a second, but I do want to go back to one of the things, like the 21 car crash, the big collision, you know, when we see that. Is that just how Daytona is going to be going forward because of the nature of super speedway racing, that you just can't have that many cars going that fast, that close together, and not taking each other out?
I think if you look at the history of the sport, ever since they went to restrictor plates back in 87, because Bobby Allison took down half the front stretch fencing at Talladega, you know, going to that type of a platform, the cars are bunched up more. And you're going to see that this year when we go to a bunch of other racetracks, too. You're going to see that form of racing with this new package for 2019. And, you know, that's just the trends that you see. You know, you go back to last year, we had the same thing the year before. I mean, when you go to plate races, you know, the biggest key to having a good day is just survival. And I remember hearing Cole Pern say to Martin Truex Jr. about two-thirds of the way through the race, he's like, look, we can go and ride at the back and maybe take a chance on missing it because you know the big one's going to happen. Or we can try to ride at the front, and we'll probably end up being in it. So it's kind of roll the dice. And that's really what it is when you get to restrictor play racing. It's simply rolling the dice.
But Logano at the end of it, did he have anything, a gripe, I guess would be the right way to say, because it was the two Fords, and Chris mm-hmm. gave him one push, but didn't give him that second push he needed. And I saw Logano go, I don't know what was said between them afterwards. Was it more of Logano can get aggressive towards people and stuff, but did he have a point where he's like, you should have worked with me more?
Well, you know, I mentioned it during the race broadcast, you know, 11:45 Sunday morning, the four drivers all met at the Ford Tech trailer. And there was a great picture that was sent to me with Edsel Ford II with all the Ford drivers when the meeting was over. And basically, their whole group was, look, we're flying under one banner. Try to help each other when we can. Not only the drivers, but the spotters. Be aware where your friends are so you can take advantage of it. At the end of the day, everybody has their own agenda. But the key is we want to see a blue oval in victory lane. And I think Logano's gripe was, with so few Fords left, and the fact that, you know, Michael McDowell was in a Ford and he could have helped Logano, I think that's where Logano's beef was. And McDowell's like, look, it's not my job to help Joey Logano win the Daytona 500. But I think at the end of the day, when you look at the bigger picture and how the Fords, and they've been more impressive than anybody, to the point where the Chevys, and I was on the grid, and I was talking to one team president for one of the super teams,
yeah.
and we were talking about how the Toyotas and the Chevys, because he made a comment to Rick Hendrick, because, hey, I hear you've got some new friends. And basically the Toyotas and the Chevys, at least the Hendrick bunch, were going to try to work together to counter the impressive, you know, solidarity within the Ford camp.
You know, Matt Yocum with us here. It is interesting how this is going to go. And now this is where I wanted to get to Atlanta. Are we going to get a better indication of what the new rules really are when we take a look at this this weekend and this Sunday in Atlanta? Are we going to get a better idea of what the cars really have?
I think the landscape is going to be different. I don't think it's going to be crystal clear just because the next few racetracks, you're going to get an indication. But each place we go is really black and white compared to, it's not all the same color. You're going to go to Atlanta. You're going to see tires wearing out. You're going to see a little bit different kind of racing because that's what we get when we go to Atlanta. Then we go on to Las Vegas with the West Coast Swing. And Vegas and Fontana, you know, intermediate tracks, but they race different. And then you throw in the mile at Phoenix. So you're going to have a good cross representation the next 4 weeks of some, ideas of what we're going to see, especially as teams fine-tune this package. And that's the big thing. It's like the All-Star race a year ago. Oh, my gosh, we should go to this. Well, you only ran half the field. You only ran half of a fuel run. And the teams didn't have a chance to have all their smart people on the computers dial in the race cars. And so it was a pretty even across the board. But then you saw people – you know, the cream always rises to the top. So I think that's what we're going to see trend-wise the first 4 weeks. You know, a lot of different people could all of a sudden, you know, surprise with a win or a good run just because this package is so new.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I'm a big Kyle Larson fan. You and I have talked about that before. I enjoy watching him race. I did not enjoy that race at Daytona because they missed so badly on that car. That was insane.
Mm-hmm.
It was like he was dirt track racing at a super speedway.
And the funny part about it was when the race was over, the car's sitting out on the grid.
I know.
On pit road. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, this is the biggest bucket of you know what, looking at it. And his team even tweeted a picture of the left side. I mean, this thing looked like it'd been at Flat Rock or someplace in the Demo Derby. And yet it ended up coming home with a top 10 finish in the Daytona 500. And they joked, if you think the left side looks good, wait till you see the right side. That was even worse. So,
How many clean cars were there left? Six?
Oh, man. I would say probably five or six, because everybody seemed to have some type of damage. You know, Logano, he had damage, although not bad, but, you know, his left rear quarter panel was crinkled. You know, you had the 24 of William Byron. He came in, and it looked like someone took a Sawzall and just started cutting and beating the left rear quarter panel of his car, and they put bare bond, you know, the huge chunks of duct tape, trying to seal it up the best they could. It looked like something you'd see, you know, going to a short track there up in Michigan, you know, Flat Rock or Toledo, someplace like that.
Now, we haven't talked a lot about Denny Hamlin. I mean, it's obviously second win in Daytona. Something like this, is that the sort of thing, because there's only a couple races like Daytona over the course of the season, the Super Speedway stuff, is it less of a catapult than we think as fans, or is it the sort of thing that mentally can help him really just build on and have a kick-ass season?
Two things I took away from the Daytona 500 for Denny Hamlin. Number one, a lot of questions going into the season, because you've got Christopher Bell, and he's lightning in a bottle. That is going to be a superstar, and everybody knows it. And he's sitting there in the Toyota camp, and everyone knows he has to be in a cup car per his contract, a good cup car, I believe in another year, maybe two max, but I think it's another year, 2020. So if you're Denny Hamlin and you've gone last year winless and you've got your other teammates are running well, all of a sudden you're on the hot seat. And so now you've won the Daytona 500. So you essentially could have locked yourself in for some stability, knowing that you've won the Great American Race again and you broke the winless streak. So you might have locked yourself in for another, you know, longer contract. And on top of that, you know, in the sport, he has what many call, I mean, he's a unicorn. And what I mean by that is you look at FedEx. They're the only sponsor on that car.
Everybody else has spin the wheel,
whatever week it is, that's what they've got. They sell different, you know, number of races for different groups of sponsors. But, you know, he's the unicorn. He's got FedEx. And so there's a lot that goes with that pressure-wise. And I think he took a lot of pressure off. In fact, I think if you go back and listen to his audio, he made a comment to Michael Waltrip, who's his golfing buddy. And I can't remember it to paraphrase it, but it was basically like, Michael Waltrip, you know, you can kiss my you-know-what, because now he's a two-time winner. Michael used to always hold that over his head. Well, I know, Danny, you've won the race one time, but I've won it twice. And they would joke around about that on the golf course. So a lot has come out of that for Denny Hamlin, and I'm expecting a good year as well, I think, for Eric Jones. You know, Byron, Michigan.
He's a Michigander. It's just fast.
And I had to laugh because he got home Sunday night, had a third place finish, and he's got his Shinola turntable, which I was a little bit jealous of because I don't have a Shinola turntable. I've got a Shinola watch, though.
Nice.
And so we were tweeting back and forth. Yep, my fiance gave it to me 2 years ago for Christmas. And so we were tweeting back and forth about what we listened to. And, you know, he was like, yeah, I've got this on there. And I'm like, hey, man, to me, Bob is the only way to go if you can only play one album. And so it was funny because other people who are Michigan natives, they were chiming in. And we got in talking about all the Michigan stuff, you know, pop, you know. I'm like, hey, man, because he even said in his little thing, yeah, I've got my Shinola turntable and I might even have a pop. And I'm like, well, I prefer Verner's. So
see, there you go. Now I got to get him some Seeger vinyl. Okay, we can take care of that. We'll take care of that. We'll get him some. We got some here at the radio station. You know that, Matt.
Oh, I know it. I've got to say this. I was telling all my friends in Daytona about, I said, my pal up in Michigan, I said, he was in the studio for like 24 hours until they finally got some dates for Bob in at Pine Knob, which, what do they call it now?
DTE Energy Music Theater.
For me, it's always going to be Pine Knob.
Right.
I mean, when I was a kid listening to CKLW, the Big 8, and they're talking about, you know, oh, yeah, Bob's going to be out at Pine Knob. It was always Pine Knob. It just had like a magical ring to it. So I'm really grateful for the Seeger fans that he's going to come back to an original destination to play his last couple shows.
The best part of the last time he played out of Pine Knob was when Bob came out kind of halfway through the show, took a little break, and came out, and he was wearing a T-shirt that said, "I still call Pine Knob." The place went crazy, man, when they did that one. All right, last question, and I kept thinking to myself, going back to racing, Matt Yoakam with us, we're on Facebook Live as well. Hi to everybody from Fox Sports After Daytona. I know with the Hans devices and everything, it's harder. I'm waving at the camera right now, but that's how you would get someone's attention that you were going to pit. You'd wave, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, with the Hans devices and everything and the way the guys are putting the car now, it's harder to see somebody, if not impossible. You have cars, though, that have turn signals on them. And I know it sounds stupid, but the more I keep thinking about it, why don't you have some way to enable a turn signal that tells the people you're getting off the track?
Well, I think if you look at how sneaky people are in racing, and many times on the team radio, they will throw a block, basically. Last year, Cole Pearn and Martin Truex Jr., pulled off the greatest fake out of anybody, and they sealed the win for themselves because they said on the radio what they were going to do. And so somebody else said, okay, they're going to pit in a lap. We're going to pit a lap before them. They hit pit road, and Truex went longer, and the way it all played out, that was the game changer, and they won the race. And I think if you had a turn signal, you know, it's much like you have those people that are going down the road, you know, I-94, and you're going, dude, you're in the left lane. You've got your blinker going. Turn your blinker off.
I don't know. I just, it was, so, you know, Jimmy Johnson had a good run, and you hate to see cars get tore up like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you just hate to see
it. Well, this is the other thing, too, and you mentioned about the hand. If you go back and look at a car, like let's say you go over to the Henry Ford,
right,
and they've got Bill Elliott's, you know, record run, his, you know, his car that went 212. It's there. Trevor Bayne's car. It's a great opportunity to look at Trevor Bayne's car with the Wood Brothers and see how sealed up the driver's compartment is. And then walk, you know, 30 feet over to where Bill Elliott's car is, and you can see how open it is. The seat is not self-contained. You know, the headrest is a joke, but that's what it was back then.
Yeah.
And now with all the carbon fiber seats, the driver can barely move. It's like he's in a jet fighter cockpit, and to try to stick your hand out the window, because remember, at the plate tracks, they even have a tool because the window nets are so tight because they want to seal it off as best they can for aero, that they even have like a little wrench that when they go to lock in the window net, they've got to use that force, that extra force, to lock in the net because it's such a tight fit. And so William Byron, you know, you talk about different people putting hands out the window and stuff like that. It's tough to see.
Man, it's I didn't realize that. It makes sense. They torque them in that much so they won't move.
Yep. So a lot goes into it.
All right, good start to the season, man. It was a fun race. I had a blast as a fan just watching it, Matt. It was fun. They got into the two-row racing. They were passing people. They were getting aggressive even early on. And then we had 40 minutes of wreck-em-up derby at the end of it. So,
well, the picture I love the most, and I'm trying to think whose car it was, but they had a shot of the left front. And you can see part of the bumper cover and Mustang taillight in that car's left front.
So seriously?
It pretty much symbolizes, you know, what you get when you go to Daytona and Talladega. Sometimes all 40 will finish, and sometimes all 40 finish, and it looks like, that, you know, they need to be on a rollback just to get them back in the hauler. So
that's crazy, man.
I know it. Yeah. I know it.
Matt, well, it's good. Hopefully get your butt up here for Seeger in June as well.
Hey, I'm telling you what, I'm already looking at that Thursday night. Would love to try to make that show. And I've got to say, I've got another few minutes here. I've got the, you know, of course, the Seeger fan club. I've got the code. And at 10 o'clock, I can go on and try to buy tickets here at Charlotte because he added the Charlotte show.
Right.
So I'm pretty jacked up, you know, so I'm counting down. I've told everybody, don't call me because I'm going to be busy at 10 o'clock trying to lock myself in. So
you're not messing around, are you, Matt?
Look, I mean, it's Bob's final tour. You can't miss any opportunity.
Amen.
Because you're going to sit there. You're going to sit there and you're like, hey, all I've got left, you know, Live Bullet, you've got the albums. You can go on YouTube and see the videos. But to see him in person, I saw him in Greenville back in December. Row 8, just unbelievable show. I mean, he came out, I think he played 7 songs as his encore.
Oh, he's just killing it. And it gets better and better and better and better and better. That's all we're hearing, man.
Yep.
All right. Well,
hey, I'm glad that you stopped traffic in Detroit with your round the clock trying to get Bob to add the Pine Knob show.
So, hey, it worked.
Fantastic job on your part.
All right.
We all appreciate it. So hopefully I'll see you there on that. Was it June 6th?
Thursday the 6th, then Saturday the 8th. Yeah. Come on up, man. You stay at the house.
I can make the 6th. I'll fly in early.
Dude, I live like a mile and a half from Pine Knob. Seriously.
Okay, so basically we're going to burn down the backyard at Big Jim's house with the we're going to pregame it in your backyard.
I
can see it all now.
The goal is to be bulletproof and invisible when we go to the show, Matt. All right.
Sounds good, bud.
All right, we'll talk soon. Thank you, buddy.
All right, man. Thanks.
All right, there he goes. Matt Yoke, Fox Sports, our guest here. Thanks for joining us, you guys, on Facebook as well, for watching there as well. Appreciate it. And keep those questions and comments coming. We're going to, if you missed any part of the interview, we're going to go ahead and put that up on our CSX Garage page, and we'll put that up as our podcast for this week. Okay? Be well.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.